Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, June 28, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Hey, we're doing good.
Doing well.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you're feeling better, Carla. That's great news.
I'm getting a little bit better every day. We can see the wound on my back from surgery getting more and more healthy looking.
Well, great. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah,
that is fantastic.
Well, yeah, the progress you guys is slow, getting, but it's sure.
Well, but as long as it's progress, that's the important thing.
We're happy.
Now, you guys getting ready for the big bash coming up, the homecoming?
We are. I've just started to do my little bit. I'm going to collect some folk songs that I enjoy singing, or I did in my youth, and sing them for the crowd. I was just writing somebody who plays guitar to see if he wants to accompany me doing that. But that'll be my little contribution this year. We're all going to offer anything we want, you know, anything that might be of service to the others in knowing. And sometimes it's serious and sometimes it's fun, and this one this year for me is fun. It should be really wonderful.
Are you going to be able to participate more this time since you're feeling better?
Oh, no, I'll be in my room in the bed. There's nothing much I can do about that because of the therapy. I need the bed. So unless I'm lucky enough to get off of it by then and be all better, I'll be in here. But they are so good, and they're able to fix up communication between here and outside, so we can see each other on computer. And they've got a computer outside, and I've got mine in here, and you can hear and see. So they just focus mine on whoever's talking, you know, whoever's got the floor that particular hour, and I can watch that from in here. And then when it's my turn to say something or do my bit, they can watch me in here. So that's the way I've done it for the last couple of years. I've been unable to get out there, but I can sure participate, and I do. I love it.
That's so great. What is the date of the event this year?
It's the late August.
Labor Day weekend.
You can find, I think it's the week before that, you can find the all the details on the Bring Forth site. There's an announcement. If you click on that, it opens up and all the information, including how you can get a seat. I think there are still seats left. There are only 40 seats, and they go fast. So be sure if you want to come and grab one. grab a reservation.
Okay, that's bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org. If any new people have been following the show and you're interested in checking that out, you're welcome to check it out and participate if you like. This is an annual event that LL Research does called Homecoming. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and go to our riff, unless you had any other announcements or anything.
No.
Okay,
well,
this is from...
One thing for the riff, we have been talking about the archetypes, and we will again today, and so my riff today is on the archetypes.
Okay, do you want to go ahead and do the riff first or go to the questions first?
Oh, I was just following your lead. I thought we would go to the questions first, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, okay. Why don't we do that then?
All right.
And that's totally fine. And let's see here. Let me shift gears here real quick. Here we go. All right. The first one is from, let's see. I hope you had a chance to look at this with the picture, from DW.
I did.
And, okay, great. DW says, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the work you're doing. I listened to the last two shows with a lot of interest. And as you mentioned, we'll need to listen to a couple of times, the last one being 2 weeks ago on the archetype sets. Definitely worth listening to a couple of times. Okay, from DW, I ended up finding out about the Law of One by a succession of events that were very meaningful to me. I would like to know if it has been established that wanderers have the capability to communicate telepathically with each other, sometimes even without being aware of it themselves. Also, does it have anything to do with some of our five senses creating the sixth one? Also, I'm not sure whether it's possible or not, but would it be possible to also have a brief analysis of this picture? And this, sorry, listeners, you can't see the picture, but it's pretty cool that he sent to us. I received this symbol while in trance and was told it was a representation of true service to others and path to immortality. The above is still missing the letter H, love, to be complete and balanced. Could Carla and Jim comment on this? Actually linked to the question. Many, many thanks.
Okay. First of all, let me do what I can with this riff, this thing. It's got three elements. It's got a square. Inside the square is circumscribed a circle. And inside the circle is a parallelogram that touches at, oh, I'd say 10 degrees east of north, 10 degrees west of south, and then just a bit more than east, southeast by just a bit, and southwest by maybe 10 degrees, and similarly, just past the half and on the left, on the west, and then maybe 10 degrees, that's the beginning of it, 10 degrees north of east. Okay, the square is the world, most likely. It has the archetypal meaning of the square, of being the world, and that means that the square is an unmagical place, and we would perhaps agree that our experience of the world, without looking at it from a spiritual viewpoint, is a distinctly unmagical place. It is tough in this world. There's no magic here. The round circle is a symbol of infinity, the O being all is one, which is one or infinity, and indicating that the spirit exists within the world. So we are those of the spirit existing in the world. Now, he wants to know about the letter H, and I looked up what the Ra said about a similar question when Puharish was trying to interpret a transmission from the Nine, where they said that CH is a principle which is the revealing principle of knowledge and law. Can you tell me what that is? And Ross said, the principle so veiled in that statement is but the simple principle of the constant or creator and the transient or the incarnate being and the yearning existing between the two, one for the other, in love and light, amidst the distortion of free will acting upon the illusion-bound entity. So the illusion is the square. The illusion-bound entity is within the square. It's also within the circle. 10 degrees east of north is the point at which fourth density comes into our planet, which also could be seen as round. And I do not know the significance of a parallelogram, except that it is neither square nor round. And I suppose it's a way of looking at us. Here we are with fourth density coming on. It's coming directly into us within the circle, not within the square. It's only within the circle that we're getting this fourth density light. So he says, he got the symbol in the trance and was told with the representation of service to other and the path to immortality. The path to immortality is strictly within spirit. And with paying attention as the light comes in at the new point of transmission, we need to pay attention to that light coming in. We can't see it. Many of us can feel it. And we need to do that with the attitude of love. We cannot look at it with a skeptical or worldly attitude. Our only way of becoming free of this illusion is using our free will in love and light. Right now, amidst the distortions of free will acting upon the illusion-bound entity. So here are these very powerful light energies coming in at the new 10 degrees east of north, and we are kind of a crazed square, is the way I'd look at a parallelogram. You know, we are not either one or the other, but we are both. Because our body is of the earth and our consciousness is of the roundness, is of infinity. So we are citizens of infinity within the illusion of earth. We are abound within that illusion. We can only use free will within that illusion. We cannot go outside the illusion to find it. This is intense when you think of there's nowhere to go. We need to work right where we are to find our ability to use our free will to respond in love to all that comes to it. Now, when Ra was talking about catalyst and experience in the sense of the archetypes, he pointed out the following. Let me find it. Okay, here it is. In the mind of the person that is truly, fully working with an enlightened love attitude. He is going to be working on the evolution of his mind, his body, and his spirit. And Ross says, the more advanced the entity, the more tenuous the connection between the sublogos and the perceived catalyst, until finally all catalyst is chosen, generated, and manufactured by the self for the self. So, let's use myself as an example. I am currently going through a phase of real limitation, pain, difficulties of the body. How do I respond to that catalyst? How do I choose to respond to the catalyst? I personally choose to respond to that catalyst in absolute faith. This is happening, consequently, this is perfect. I have no degree of doubt. This is what is perfect for me at this time. Now, if it's perfect for me at this time, why is it perfect? That's a good question, and I'm working on it. I do feel that, in general, my times of being down encourage me to do inner work, to drift more, to meditate more, to spend more time in the circle as opposed to the square. I don't have to do anything. I can just be. So that's the big one right there. I think that I am simply improving my maturity of mind, body, and spirit, and working on becoming a more fully advanced being within incarnation. Why? Because, for one thing, if you can do that with yourself, you help the whole planet. You lighten the planet. So the more that you can stay with an open heart and absolute love, the more that you enlighten the world, because what you do is also redundant. It also works with the world. All is one. So I believe that that is the basic gist of the meaning of that rather simple drawing, the square, the orb within the square, and then the human within that. I believe that the human is H. It is also C. C, carbon, the world. H, breath, consciousness, the spirit. That may mean nothing to David, and I want to say, hey, Dave, it's good to talk to you. It's always good to talk to you, bud. And, you know, I could be wrong. Jim, want to refine on that?
Well, you covered most of it, the square being the unmagical, manifested world we live in, and the circle, the spirit, having the magic and existing within the creation. Also on the corners, the square is not, the sides don't stop, they go on, perhaps suggesting going on in infinity, because at each of the corners there's a symbol, either the alpha or the omega, the beginning and the ending. And beginnings and endings, it's suggested by that placement there, are infinite, as is the creation. But there is also a portion in the spirit in the middle, signified by the circle, which is even beyond the infinity of the created world. That's one of the things that I think blew my mind most about what Ra had to say about the two natures of infinity, was that the infinity of creation was exceeded even by the infinity of the spirit, which was beyond all creation, that from which the creation is made. So that we exist in an infinite way, both as created beings and as portions of the one creator, which has not yet left the uncreated nature. And that's about all I'd have to say about that.
Fascinating.
Okay, thank you for that. And when you mentioned all is one, it reminded me of something I had meant to tell you at the beginning of the show, and I forgot, so I'm going to interject this real briefly. A couple of years ago, my husband and son went to a concert by an Israeli band called Orphaned Land, and it's a heavy metal band. Well, there's different genres of metal, but it's a type of metal, okay? And it actually has a lot of ethnic flavoring, okay?
For iron.
What's that?
So maybe some are iron, some are magnesium.
There's
steel.
Genres, but I'm going to keep it simple, okay? It definitely rocks, okay, but it has a lot of ethnic flavoring, Israeli, Middle Eastern sound to it, and some of the songs are very, very beautiful. Well, the lead singer came out on stage, and he was wearing this robe, you know, and everybody immediately thought, oh, he looks like Jesus, and everybody always tells him that. Well, it was a wonderful concert, and I really, really enjoyed the music. I hadn't really heard of them before, prior to that, or maybe just a little bit. And after the concert, it was at a small club, and I saw him walking around, because they were the opening band. There was another band coming afterwards. So he was just kind of walking around, and I walked up to him, and he looked at me, and immediately we made eye contact, and it was like we recognized each other. And I just walked up to him, and he just opened his arms and gave me a big hug. And here I am, probably the only short, middle-aged woman in the whole place, okay? There's all these, you know, young teenagers and 20-somethings, right? Well, the music is very, very spiritual, and the lyrics all have to do with making peace between the Christians and the Muslims and, you know, that whole, you know, the tribes of Esau and the tribes of Isaac and all of that stuff, which I'm not real, I'm a little rusty on my biblical stories, but, you know, all that strife in the Middle East. So it's all about making peace, and we're all brothers. So I talked to him a little bit about the T-shirts that they had, because it had all the spiritual imagery and symbolism on the T-shirts, and I was really impressed, you know, with the lyrics. It was obviously very spiritual music. And so I wrote down on a piece of paper, I said, here, check this out. And I gave him the LLResearch.org website and the bringforth.org, and I said, you got to check this out. Well, this was a couple of years ago, and I just found out the other day that they had released their new album, and the title is All Is One. So,
wow.
Yeah, like, so I just had to interject.
How about
that? So he clearly went to the website, and I haven't bought the album yet, but I'm about to. So we'll see what the lyrics are about this time, but. Just wanted to put in a little plug for. What's that?
I said there might be a good tuning song for our meditations. We have a meditation group that meets once a week, and we
I'll let you know.
We play rock. It just has to have a spiritual offering in the words, and you know, we have a lot of young people here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of people, that's the music that they know, so it's not at all surprising that it's rock.
Well, there was one song There was one song called Brother that was actually a ballad. That's the only one I've heard so far, because I just heard it on the internet. But I am going to buy the album. So I will let you know if any of it might be appropriate for that. But wanted to put a little plug in that, because I think it's just wonderful to see, to hear about spiritual music, especially music, you know, based on the Law of One and trying to bring about peace in the world. And I think they're doing a great job there. So
great story.
And the band is called Orphaned Land. So okay, gonna go on to our next question. This is from Chicken in Space. I would like to know why Ra and Friends, despite being in error of human behavior on a macrocosmic scale, decided a quiet road would be the best road for harvest. Also, Service to Self has prospered with their incursions and has managed a firm foundation for hierarchy. To offer a counter service, so to speak, makes sense to me. Ra has previously given such service at a few occasions, but refers to the naivete of previous actions as to why there will not be a manifestation again. I would also like to know why their current plan of action is not considered naive in regard to how volatile our behavior has been. This is from Chicken in Space.
Okay. I have a lot less to say on this, so maybe Jim can pick up the slack. My basic feeling about Ra's opinion about how they're working is that they have discovered that manifestations cause people to focus on everything but the message, and that times when they interacted in person, such as in Egypt and in Atlantis, it all went terribly, terribly wrong. So rather than try to help with technology, rather than try to help with anything that has sacred geometry in it or whatever, like the pyramids were, and crystals and so forth, obviously they had helped with those. and the results were, you know, the sinking of Atlantis, because they developed mass destructive weapons and destroyed their own continent. And with the pyramids, they were intended as places of initiation and healing for all people. And as soon as the leader had died, when Akhenaten went, the priests simply took over, and only those that were royal or had a lot of money were able to use the pyramids, and they didn't use them for either initiation or healing. So they felt that from afar it was better if they simply offered the information through channels such as I, and let people read it if they found it helpful. To their mind, what is occurring is a very difficult harvest, but they don't concern themselves with the things that bring about harvest. Their focus is on the evolution of mind, body, and spirit, and it has nothing to do with the outer world. It has to do with how we think, how we act, how we manage our life, how we live. So they continue to do that. Now, if somebody blows up people to the extent that they are in danger of losing their soul, their electrical body is in danger of being blown to smithereens, they do take action, and have several times in the past. It would not be they don't take action by stopping the bombs. They take action by saving the people, bringing them into other planets and offering them other places to incarnate and continue evolving. That would be what I have to say. Mickey, you got more enlightenment?
Well, I think the most important consideration, as you said, as far as Ra is concerned with our harvest, is the free will evolution of our mind, body, and spirit. Whatever increases our free will is something that is very valuable and is to be protected, I think, as far as they're concerned. And like you said, when there are manifestations or more obvious hints, I guess you'd say, things would be considered phenomenal that certain people could take as a sign or a symbol. And that does tend to cause distortion, because people get lost in the symbol and miss the message. As far as the current plan of action, not considered naive, well, I think this is a lot like a channeling process. We've discovered throughout the years that as you're channeling, you really can't stop to think about what you're doing. You can't analyze the words and the concepts as you're channeling, or you'll stop the channel. So you continue channeling, continue doing the job, and afterward, after it's all done, then you look back over it and you evaluate it, you analyze it then. So I think they're in medias res. They're in the process of engaging in the harvest in their small and silent yet helpful ways. And later on, after it's all over, they'll probably look back and see if there's any adjustments, you know, any tweaks they could make, and to see if there was any naivete involved, or if maybe they could do something differently. I think growth is always reevaluating where you've been, so that you go further along the line of expanding your knowledge and creating more experience for the Creator. So only time will tell whether this is a naive jest on the part of Ra. So I guess that's about it for me.
Monica, you okay, always have a follow-up.
Actually, I don't this time.
Okay.
I think you guys covered it, so... Okay, our next question is from Indollering. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Is the Earth hollow? Are all planets formed with a cavernous interior? Did Admiral Byrd verify the existence of an inner Earth?
I saw the evidence that Byrd had, but it was persuasive. Ross said that our planet was not hollow, but honeycombed. And he didn't say whether all planets are formed that way, but we certainly are. And the caverns are, to a small extent, inhabited. So there's a lot of mystery there. The photos that Byrd had were of the cap, the polar cap, and it seemed fairly obvious that there was a legitimate hole down into the Earth. I saw that in a book, which ended up saying that it was inconclusive, according to scientific evaluation. I don't know whether it's inconclusive or whether there's just not enough interest, money, and good equipment to evaluate stuff like that at this time. A lot of times we're stuck with areas of research that will not be funded by anybody. And so, you know, if it has to do with something that's going to help, you know, make a better button or make a better weapon or influence people better, there's going to be all kinds of research money available because people are interested in making a better button. There's money in that. But there's no money in paranormal research. It's just really out there. According to people, they really would like to think that none of this is happening. They don't want to hear about it. And it's very difficult to find serious money to investigate a proposal like the world is honeycombed. I've heard very convincing, you know, stories. But they're stories. They're hearsay. They're interesting. I suggest that in Dollaring, do some reading. There's work that's been done on this. And, you know, if I found that research, I'm sure he or she can as well.
Anything to add on that, Jen?
No, that pretty much covers it, I think.
Well, I know my my good friend Maya Nartumid, the one that I mentioned a while back that had written the book about Elvis, I know I went to a lot of her meditation meetings many, many years ago, and she often did pathworking, you know, guided meditations with us to meet some of the inner Earth beings. And I actually had some very real experiences. And in my meditation, I very clearly saw some of these beings. And I know she said they were from the inner Earth. So just for what it's worth, I know there are people out there who claim to be working with some of these beings that inhabit the inner Earth. So I don't know. We definitely had a very real experience. And
well, yeah.
Anyway.
That's the thing, you know. It's when I started investigating UFOs as physical UFOs. Do they really come here? After talking to several people to whom it had happened who were UFO experiencers, hearing their stories, seeing the physical effects of UFO on them, hearing things that were very evidential, I personally became rapidly aware that they're certainly real and they're certainly different. Some are very positive. Some are not necessarily so good. So it just, you have to build your own research. If you're interested in it, you can link up to people. I don't know who's still doing UFO research. I know it used to be the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, and APRO, APRO. I don't know if they're still going. But there are groups that are glad to have you and will call you if there's something that's happened in your area so you can go and at least hear the story and walk the walk that it happened on and see if there are any magnetic effects and use hypnotic therapy to regress the person and find out more about the incident from things that they didn't want to remember consciously, but, you know, you get through a block that way and find out more. Things that anybody can do if they're interested enough, just, you know, follow it. And you will rapidly have your mind expanded, I promise.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff and get into the archetypes discussion. This is from Ra 78:33. You may well consider the very informative difference between a thing in itself and its relationships or functions. There is much study of archetype, which is actually the study of functions, relationships, and correspondences. The study of planets, for instance, is an example of archetype seen as function. However, the archetypes are, first and most profoundly, things in themselves, and the pondering of them and their purest relationships with each other should be the most useful foundation for the study of the archetypal mind.
Thank you, Monica. I chose this not because it's inspiring, but because it's very challenging. When we talk about archetypes, we're talking about something that is within the roots of mind. It's very deep in the mind. It's way beyond the conscious level. It comes up to us in myth and lore and ethnic studies of people and their religions. You can study the religion of the Greeks, the religions of the Romans. You can study all kinds of different systems which attempt to grapple with who we are by means of talking about personifications of love or wisdom or prosperity or sexuality or whatever. For instance, they said the study of planets is a study of archetype seen as function. And if you think about astrology, which is the study of planets according to their effect on us, you get into an infinite, almost, amount of information having to do with the influence of planets on each other and on us. They all have different orbits that, you know, coming through our skies anywhere from once every month, like our moon, to once every many, many years, like Pluto. They have effect on us because of that. The planets have often been linked, according to Mars, for instance, being the personification of war, the red planet, and Venus being the personification of love. I remember I was in college when somebody came up to me. There was a lot of LSD around at the time, and I feel sure he had imbibed. And he said to me, "You are a child, the daughter of Venus as a mother and Mars as a father." And I thought to myself, that's not really as silly as it seems, because we all have a dynamic tension between the love within us and the restlessness or the violence within us. How are we going to respond? Are we going to respond lovingly or are we going to respond aggressively? This is all to say this is one way of looking at archetypes as function. But what is the archetype, each of the archetypes all by itself? The word for that in philosophy is German. It's called Ding an sich, and the translation is thing in itself. What's the Ding an sich? So Ra said that there were 21 archetypes, 7 for the mind, 7 for the body, and 7 for the spirit. That we had started out with 3 for the mind, body, and spirit. And gradually, as we became more complex, there were more archetypes added to the system. And of course, the 22nd archetype is the fool, who is walking off the edge of the world, off a cliff, and the alligator is waiting to snap him up. He's blind. He's carrying a rucksack on his back, hung on a pole, and he's obviously perfectly happy. Is he walking to his death? Is the air going to hold him, the midair of faith? What's going to happen? Well, that's the fool risking everything, and that is, above all, the main archetype for us. So I can go through the archetypes. I can talk about each one. But it's very easy for me to slide into the functions of how they relate to each other and so forth. But what are they in and of themselves? It's something that is almost difficult to wrap the mind around. But it's, I think, probably the central basis, should be the central basis for attempting a study of the archetypes, whether you use this system or whether you use a system developed by somebody like Carl Jung or others that have worked in that area of archetypes. It's a fascinating way of trying to discover the roots of our minds, trying to find who we are by looking at those massive and yet very transparent images of men and women, of shapes, of various concepts that are complex one to the other in the pictures of the archetypes, so that in looking at these pictures and trying to focus on what this archetype is in and of itself, you can begin to see yourself in that archetype, not how it functions, but in and of itself. And so I can talk about archetypes, but I will almost always be talking about the function. It's very difficult to stay away from that. Our minds work that way. But I believe the deep study of the phenomenology of a fool, as someone who wrote a book about the raw archetypes called it, is going to need to be silent contemplation of those concept complexes or pictures. You can find those by going to lawofone.info. That's just Law of One, LAWOFONE.ORG, all small, case, lowercase, and get clicking on the links page. And then when you find links to other sites and you get down to the archetypes, you can see the images. And the image that you want is the one that's called the Saint-Germain, the third paragraph of the tarot images section in the links section on that site. If you click on that on your computer as I'm talking through these, you can see the site. You can see the images one by one. You can see what I'm talking about. And I think that we can probably do best by starting on them with the time we have left and letting Jim talk about each one, and then I will add anything that I can, because Jim's a raw scholar and has this information very succinctly. So why don't we start, if Monica, if you don't have any questions about the riff.
No, but I do want to clarify that website. Okay, if you go to lawofone.info, then scroll down.
Scroll down till you see tarot images. And
there's
then,
you have to click on links first,
and then,
and then
links.
Tarot. In, yeah.
Yeah. So you click
okay,
on the
so
link.
Okay, so lawofone.info, click on links, then tarot images, right?
Yeah, then again, you go down to where you're talking about the tarot images on the links page, and you can see in the third paragraph of that section, it says both the Zane and the Fassman images are descended from the Comte de Saint-Germain version. So click on Comte de Saint-Germain, and it will take you right to that site. And then when we're talking about each archetype, bingo, you've got the pictures. Now, the discussion of what that is, that's not by Ra. So you can look at it, it's interesting, but it's not what the card means according to those of Ra. For that, you have to get into Volume 4 of the Law of One sessions. And Don really only questioned about the first seven. And we get, by reflection and inference, we get most of our information about the other 14 because Don died before we could finish the work. So there we have it. Is that clear about how you get there?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Jim.
Well, I think we've talked about both the matrix and potentiator, the conscious and the subconscious minds, in our last session, so I thought maybe we could start with the catalyst of the mind this time. Again, we have a female quality, and the basic quality of the female, as Ra mentioned in other information, was the awaiting the reaching. And the potentiator, the first female that we come in contact with, sends catalyst to the conscious mind, basically. It has it available when the conscious mind is able to penetrate that book on her lap that's covered by the mantle or the scarf. There is information in that book that is then released when the male is seeking it. The female has it available. So as he reaches and she awaits the reaching, then you have to choose the words carefully, because if you say experience, then in the archetypical manner, you're talking about catalyst which has been successfully processed by the mind and can then be used in the future. It is stored experience. So what the potentiator sending up through the veil to the conscious mind is opportunities for learning if they can be taken advantage of. So we look at the catalyst. This other female now is holding a bird. And Ross suggested that bird reflects the nature of catalyst as being of the unconscious mind. So it has basically no charge to it until the conscious mind of the seeker interacts with it in some way. We're always running into catalyst every day, and you know, from moment to moment, there's always catalyst happening. Either we hear it, we see it, we smell it, we touch it, we sense it in some way, and we interact. And through this interaction, then, the sphere, Ra suggests, that she's holding in her right hand, suggests the magical nature that catalyst has to transform. It transforms the mind of the seeker. It transforms the experience of the seeker. It's transformed into experience for the seeker, I guess would be the more accurate way of saying it. And the serpent that is at the brow there signifies wisdom, which comes through the veil of forgetting. Now, this is a cultural image. The Egyptians used the serpent at both the brow, which suggests the positive nature of wisdom, and at the solar plexus, which suggests the negative nature of control or manipulation. Now, in this image, there's only the serpent at the brow, so we're talking about the catalyst which comes through the veil of forgetting and can produce wisdom, which is another way of looking at catalyst that has been successfully utilized and stored as experience. And the male, then, that is storing this experience is a male character, is the male nature, and is part of the way the Creator has, it's kind of hard to put into words things that are really beyond words, but the way the Creator has funneled a certain amount of creative energy or opportunity so that portions of its creation that we would call seekers of truth, that have the mind, the body, and the spirit, can begin to accumulate information and wisdom by interacting with other portions of the creation. And the whole idea, of course, we have to remember that, you know, in the third density, which these cards and the way Ra interpreted the archetypes is of the third density, is to open the heart in love. That's the bottom line. Now, there's a whole lot that happens between our first encounter with Catalyst and getting to love. So that I think Ra called that the stuff of third density. And there's a whole lot of stuff that we go through. So are there any questions? Does that, you know, make any sense so far, the relation of the catalyst to the experience and the seeker? Out there in radio land, do you have any questions?
If no questions.
Okay, people, speak up. I don't hear you.
carry on with the catalyst then. Anything that strikes me from, I've got some information on it from searches I've done of the raw material. And as Jim said, Ross said the all catalyst is designed to offer experience. The experience in your density may be loved and accepted, or it may be controlled. These are the two paths. When neither path is chosen, the catalyst fails in its design, and the entity proceeds until catalyst strikes it, which causes it to form a bias towards acceptance and love, or separation of control. And it then very dryly notes that there is no lack of space-time in which this catalyst may work. So if you're trying to deal with something by shoving it aside, not thinking about it, as Tony, what's his name?
DiNozzo
in NCIS said one time, how do you deal with things like that? He said, I don't think about them. Not a bad thing, but the thing of it is, you'll keep getting it. If you don't get a little nudge, you're going to get a stronger nudge, and it'll end up being a huge holler. It finally gets your attention so that you have to deal with it. So you deal with it, as Jim said, either by using love, by using the higher chakras, or you deal with it by willing, the solar plexus chakra, the base chakra of sexuality, and the orange chakra of relationship. If you're going to use those lower chakras and will things to be as you want them, even if it's for the good of everybody according to your logic, still you're using the wrong approach according to the system of catalyst and experience as set up by those of Ra. And if you want to know, well, what is catalyst? Precisely, how can I tell when it comes? And Roger says, all that assaults your senses is catalyst. As simple as that. You can get physical catalyst, you can get mental catalyst, you can get spiritual catalyst. But it's all the same. It's all whatever happens. So naturally, the negatively oriented entity is going to program for maximum separation from and control over all those things and conscious entities which it perceives as being other than the self. See, that's the thing about the path of service to self. Ra calls it the path of that which is not. It's based on a lie. It's based on saying that there's nothing to the heart. It's not there. It should not be used. You should only use the will. And so it's based on a misapprehension of the way things really are. And you can make it work here. You can't make it work finally in sixth density to the point where there becomes only one polarity in sixth density about the middle way. It's all one at that point because the path of that which is not peters out and it cannot be held. So basically, the purpose of our lives, the purpose of incarnative existence, as Ra, is the evolution of mind, body, and spirit. So, catalyst helps us by making us choose. It's about choices. And I wrote a book that tries to, explain, it's a basic start on how the Ra system works, and it's called The Choice. Because that's what third density is. It's a choice. A choice of polarity between love and fear, between loving and accepting something and controlling it. Let's see. And as I said earlier, I thought it was very telling. The more advanced the entity, the more tenuous the connection between perceived catalyst and the sub-logos, in other words, you and the perceived catalyst. If you are just reacting randomly to catalyst as you perceive it, then you haven't taken hold yet. And the person that has taken hold, has made the choice, and is using all catalyst to the maximum extent, doesn't have random catalyst. It's all used. So we need to be hungry. We need to gather an appetite for the adventure that we're on. And rather than resisting bends in the road, say, well, okay, hey, we're going to have a change, and let's see where this goes. You know, throw out fear, encourage fearlessness and trust. And as far as the positive catalysts go, the positive use of catalysts, you really can't make a mistake. And as Ross said, there are no mistakes when you come right down to it.
But there are surprises.
But there are surprises. Okay, I guess that's all I have to say about catalysts. So, Jim, shall I go ahead and talk about experience also?
Sure.
Okay. They call this the emperor in other systems of the archetypes, which are all basically, you know, using the 22 symbols, 22 cards, but sometimes the cards are distinctly different. And the actor is sitting on a square thing that really represents the earth. He is looking towards the left, interestingly enough, and his skirt is skewed to protect him by being further on the left than it is on the right. So there's a danger there, and generally people do look for what's going to go wrong before they just accept everything as, oh, this is going to be fine, it's going to be okay. We're looking, by nature, we're looking first at possible problems that might pop up. And this is good. I mean, that kind of thinking has saved many a person from walking into traffic or driving foolishly or things like that. But the seeker is in this experience working in the mind. And if he has chosen the right-hand path in total purity, Ross says that it is perceptive of Don to note that the person cannot be harmed by a left-hand catalyst. And Ross says this is exquisitely perceptive. So that's the thing to remember. As far as this archetype is concerned, the secret is to quit looking to the left and accept the positive nature of all catalysts so that you are not spending your time in fear, but are spending your time enjoying what's happening and being in the moment in as lighthearted a way as you can. Okay, that pretty much sums up what I've got.
Well, good timing, because we're just about out.
Dry. Go ahead.
No, never. You're never dry, Carla. We're just about out of time anyway.
Oh,
Jim,
goodness.
Did you have anything brief to add? Yeah, we got about a minute left. So.
Well, this has been really fun. I've enjoyed this and you know, really taking another look at them. Jim and I used to do this every night. We'd take one of the pictures and we'd look at it, we'd meditate on it, and we'd share our perceptions with each other. And we did this for, 3 years or so?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Wow.
And finally,
cool.
We realized that we'd sort of hit a wall. We weren't going anywhere. And as we went through the beach time, we saw the same thing. So we accepted that we probably ought to let ourselves live some life and come back when we had more life on us and more experience so that we could see them with new eyes, because so often reading and thinking about material that has a deep spiritual nature hits you at one place in your 20s, another in your 30s, another in your 40s, and so forth. It never gets old. You just change, and so you see it all new. I found this to be true of the Law of One material. It, as I become more mature or old, I see it. I see new things about it all the time.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the hallmark of some genuinely, you know, profound material here, that you're not outgrowing it and you continue to see more depth in it. Because I know that's true for myself as well with the Law of One. Okay, we are out of time. So thank you so much, Carla and Jim. And we will see you next week. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Reichert and Jim McCarty. Please check out llresearch.org and lawofone.info. Also, bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org. That's llresearch.org, lawofone.info, and bringforth.org. You can also submit questions at the bringforth.org website. Go to the section on discussion Q&A with Carla L. Reichert, submitting questions. And I'll ask your questions the following week. And we also always welcome live callers as well. We're here every Friday evening at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We'll see you next week.